Hello, Marquette basketball fans. Welcome back to the Golden Break. It feels good to be back with all of you. I know it's been a minute. Show announcement. This year, we're not going to be able to do weekly shows like we normally have. We've added multiple children to the production team. And unfortunately, that has gotten a little bit in the way of our ability to provide you weekly content. But with that being said, we are going to do our best to keep this show going and to keep it alive because we have been so fortunate to not only even have people be interested in the things that we have to say, which is shocking that anybody gives a shit about anything I have to say, or any of us for that matter, but also too, we've been so fortunate to have such great guests. From Kolek to Diener to McNeil to Nevada Smith, we want to try to continue to bring you voices to learn more about this team and to continue the momentum that we've had. And let's be honest, right now, it's an exciting time to be a Marquette basketball fan. I think most fans should be relatively happy with what we've seen so far. This has been a tough-ass schedule to start the year. And I really like that for multiple reasons. One, I think, especially for your second year players under Shaka, looking at where they ended the season and just seeing these first few weeks begins to give you an idea of the player development over the summer. One of the things I was really looking for under Shaka was player development. And to be honest with you, I think that's really rooted in my Woj scars of his inability to develop players. And probably the thing that frustrated me the most about him was something I was really hopeful for with Shaka. And I think we've definitely seen it in multiple players, and we'll talk about that along the way as we kind of jump topic to topic here. But overall, I mean, really this team had, I mean, the Baylor game, phenomenal. Unbelievable win, an all-timer, one we're going to be talking about for a while. But, you know, even those games against Mississippi State and Purdue, I mean, those are really, really tough teams, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, for us to go into Mackey Arena this early in the season, to get actual, like, legit minutes from freshmen to play in that type of environment, to be there in that whole game, to really, I mean, we were dominant, I'd say in 30, maybe dominant's a strong word, but I mean, we were doing extremely well for 30 minutes of that game. You know, there was that end there where I think we just kind of ran out of gas, but I think overall we should be happy with where this team is, but we should also expect a lot more. So I'm going to jump around topic to topic. I kind of just wrote down a list of things that I want to discuss. They're not really in any particular order. And then we'll end the show with some of the Twitter questions that we took. Let's start with the starting lineup. You know, something that we've discussed a lot in the production team is sort of this Sean Jones, Stevie Mitchell, David Joplin problem? I don't know if it's a problem. That's probably not the right word. But those three players, in finding out where they're going to fit in the starting lineup in the future, is going to be really interesting to see how it unfolds. Because the reality is all three of those guys have incomplete games, where one has a strength, another has a weakness. And trying to find the right way to get them on the court is going to be extremely important. You know, we had a question from Scotty Schmeis. You know, I love Stevie Mitchell, he says, but do you think he will be replaced by Joplin or Ross at some point in the starting lineup? And the answer is maybe. You know, listen, Scotty, if you want to start a Stevie Mitchell fan club, I'm in. I'm 100% in. I adore Stevie Mitchell. I can only imagine how much fun Shaka has coaching him. You can see he's Mr. Fundamental is what I call him, because he does all the small things extremely well. And what he gives you as a presence on the defensive side of the ball is extremely important. The problem is when you have Stevie and Omax on the floor at the exact same time, you run into potential shooting issues. I know everyone is going to reference Omax's giant game where he shot what, I don't know, it was like 80% from the floor and 50% from three, and just had an absolute insane shooting night from the arc. But the reality is as of right now, I would still not call Omax a shooter. If you look at his overall stats, he's not someone that you would call reliable from the arc. Can he get there? Maybe. The shot looks cleaner. It looks better. But when you have him and Stevie on the floor at the exact same time, you expose yourself, especially in the way that this team is now running their offense. They really are running almost this five-out look with a lot of movement around the arc. This is very different than what we saw from last year, where I felt like we were more playing left side, right side of the court. Shaka is definitely spreading things out a lot more. The issue is actually something that I thought got exposed in the Wisconsin game. You know, down the stretch, well, first of all, I think Omax was like 1-for-7 from three. And if when you looked at the last 5 minutes of the game, or maybe it was the last 8 minutes of the game, Omax had some wide open looks. And that was on purpose. Wisconsin was guarding us that way. Wisconsin was not going to allow a single game from Omax to make them think that they automatically had to go out and close hard on it. I mean, if you watch the replay of those, Wisconsin wasn't sprinting to the shooter on there. That was part of the strategy. It exposed us, you know, and I don't know if I'm going to hang that on Shaka. I mean, it's really early in the season, and you want to give these guys the green light. I mean, if this offense is going to work, it's going to work because – Well, you know, if it's going to work, it's going to work like it did in the Baylor game. And what happened in the Baylor game was that it was not about an individual taking over the game. We sincerely worked within our offensive system, and we just sought out the best shot in the possession. That is when we are at our absolute best, is when we seek out the best shot in the solution, and to not allow an individual player to try to take over multiple possessions in a row. And when you have Stevie and Omax on the floor at the same time, and if they continue to have inconsistent shooting nights from the arc, in that Baylor game, I mean, everybody was scoring. Everybody was shooting well. It was hard for them to sag or to face guard, because the reality was, is I walked away from that game not feeling that one player had a phenomenal night. I walked away from that game feeling that that was probably the most true team win I've seen in Shaka's tenure. That was really everybody participating. But in the Wisconsin game, they definitely started to guard us in a way where they were coming and closing out on the guys who are the shooters, the Cam and the TKs of the world. And Stevie and Omax, especially Omax in the second half, they didn't feel the need to do that and protected the hoop a lot better. And so I don't know. I mean, listen, you could say, hey, should Shaka have put the red light on Omax and have him pass that shot up? You know, probably not. I guess this early in the season, you want Omax. He's got the look. Let's prove that he can shoot through it. Does Shaka let him take that shot in February? You know, time is going to tell, and that's going to be one of the big difference makers. Stevie has struggled offensively. There's just no doubt about it. Whether it's shot making at the hoop, you know, he's had a couple of nice plays here and there, and you can see the potential, but the lack of consistency hurts. And it's not like, you know, even when Tyler isn't shooting well, like, he's still creating. Stevie doesn't have that yet. He's not there yet. But on the flip side, let's move then to, does that mean you put Sean Jones in? All right. Well, the issue with Sean Jones is, one, him being a freshman and still getting used to the game, which we're going to talk a little bit more about later. His size is going to be an issue on the defensive side of the ball. It's going to be about matchup for him. You know, there are some teams where that's going to be okay, and there's going to be some opponents where that's not going to be okay. I think he's a really offensively aware individual where he understands where guys are on the court. I think he is just as much of a creator as he can be a scorer, but I still worry very much about him defensively. And, you know, listen, the same goes for Joplin. When you listen to Shaka's remarks after the games. I try to watch every single one of his post-conference interviews because I think he's really insightful. Like with Woj, I would literally just want to bash my head through a wall listening to him talk. But with Shaka, I feel like I'm actually getting real content and I'm getting a good look at the way that they start to look at things because Shaka's a pretty honest guy. And he's the first one that has said, he goes, you know, listen, with Joplin and Cam, he said this about, you know, if these guys have to understand that their defense comes first. And Cam, I think, is a much better defender than Joplin is. Joplin is still lost. Next time Joplin is in, when he is off, just stare at Joplin a little bit during defensive possessions. I think he still struggles to know where to be on the court. I think sometimes he still struggles to know what his assignment is. You know, and when I say assignment, you know, think about it as every time the ball moves, an assignment changes for a defender. When a pass is made, everyone's assignment changes, right? When a dry guy drives to the hoop, everyone's assignment changes. I think his brain is still trying to calculate that next move. He does not have that instinctual defensive mind yet. And for as insane as his scoring can be, he can be a real deficit on the other side of the ball. And we are a defensive-minded team, and we need to be a defensive-minded team. I think that if we are going to actually make some noise, we are going to have to make sure that we are defense first. And Stevie is going to give you that, right? Omax is going to give you that. Sean Jones and Joplin still have to develop that side of the ball. And so, Scotty, if we're going to get to a point where we're going to put Joplin or Ross in the starting lineup, it's going to be because those guys have made strides defensively. Let's stay on the offensive side of the ball because something I want to talk about is our tendency to have this hero ball complex. We have seen specifically, especially from TK, Cam, and Joplin, and Cam and Joplin more than anybody else, is that when they get a hot hand that they tend to dominate multiple possessions in a row where we take shots early in a shot clock and we don't get into our offensive stuff. We will fail this year if that continues. And Shaka has said quite as much. I mean, he said these guys have to understand that when they're in a hot streak, that it's just as much about getting other players involved as it is about them scoring. And in the Baylor game, there was never a better example of that. I never felt like when somebody hit one or two shot or when hit two or three shots in a row, it didn't come because they just dribbled the ball up and did their thing. Like their shots came out of the offensive system in that game. And listen, you're going to be able to cook when you allow the system to go. But those young guys are going to have to learn that lesson. I mean, when you look at when these guys were at their scoring peaks in high school, you know, they would just dominate a game, take the ball up, run off a screen. Like they would literally be the offense at their high school. And learning and understanding that you can still score within an offensive system is a tough lesson for any 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old to have to learn. It's what separates, I think, the really good players from the bad ones. You know, only the real, real superstars can do that. But I think even with that said, let's take a look. All right, here's a really good example. I think two examples of where I feel like the hero ball type of offense can be a detriment to a team. I think we are better without Justin Lewis. And it's not an indictment of Justin Lewis. Justin Lewis is a really good player. I'm greatly appreciative of the things that he brought to this program. But he was never put in a position where he was going to score through an offensive system. You know, during his tenure with Woj, it was about just letting Justin cook and letting him create his own shots. And even last year, I think the difference of last year was Shaka just brought him out to the three-point line a lot more rather than him to have to kind of operate in the block. We started to let him operate from the arc to get his shot. But we were a very ball-dominant offense when we had Lewis and Marcel in the game. We were far more reliant on those two creating than we really were working the system. I mean, there's a giant difference from last year's offense to this year's offense. I think we are extremely better. But I also want to point to another team in Purdue, which, you know, people are going to say I'm crazy or I'm an idiot about this, but whatever, who cares? I don't think anybody really cares. But, you know, I think Purdue is a better team without Jaden Ivey, a better team, right? This is not, an indictment of a Jaden Ivey, but I had them out early in my brackets. I didn't have them losing to St. Peter's. I don't know that anybody did. But I watched enough Purdue basketball last year to see that that offense was so reliant on Jaden Ivey. And listen, even the best of players are going to have bad nights. The only real teams that can get away with that type of hero ball, the guys that have, you know, 3 5-star recruits on the team, you know, the Kentuckys of the world, the Dukes of the world, right? When you have multiple stars like that, when one guy's got a bad night, you can have somebody else who can step up. But when you take Purdue's team last year, when Jaden Ivey had a horrible game and blew it in the playoffs, I mean, he just, there was not a lot of other options in that offense. Did not learn how to function within its system because it became so reliant on a superstar like that. And that was the same case I felt like with Marquette last year. It was Lewis or die. And so I'm really actually pleased to see that we've moved away from that, because Shaka seems to, even the way he's recruiting, is staying away from that type of player because he wants to build a more robust offensive system that will create points. Rather than just hoping that we get that 5-star guy. And there's, you know, I think that's the better approach, especially for who we are as a program. You know, 5-star guys also make it hard to build that cohesiveness over time when you see most of them becoming one and done. The evolution of who Marquette will be as a program over the years is going to be really important to who we want to be, because, hey, the throne is open in the Big East, all right? Nova is not the Nova of old. You know, I'm not saying that I'm completely writing him off at this point. You know, Kyle Neptune will give him time to, obviously, maybe he writes that ship. Oh, pun intended. And, you know, maybe he gets things to work over there. But the way I see it, there's a weakness right now in the crown. It's like Game of Thrones in the Big East. You know, who is going to be the next Villanova? And I very much want to see Marquette step into those shoes. And I think they can, in the way that Shaka is building out this team, the way that he is developing this system, by really trying to find guys that fit his program. Right now, I think he has a couple of incomplete players, like I've talked about with Stevie Mitchell, David Joplin, you know, young guys like Ross and Sean Jones. Like, these guys still have holes in their game. And so the lineups we've seen, you know, and that's also early, so lineups, you know, this early in the season are going to, you know, ebb and flow as he tries to tinker and find what works. But, you know, as these guys start to round out their games, especially through this year and next, we're going to see really, I think, what Shaka's vision is in the long term for this program. And let's focus in now on a couple of dudes. I want to talk just about a couple of individual players where I feel like their game is at and where I think it needs to be. And we got to start with Cam Jones. It is so funny watching Shaka react in the post-game conference, post-game interviews, because you could tell how mad he gets. I mean, he says, "I get mad at Cam Jones." Cam wants me to let him do his thing and get out there. And I'm trying to get him to understand to play within the system. And I think we've actually, over the series of games so far this year, we've started to see Cam, especially in the Wisconsin game, where he really, I felt like, was starting to take threes more in rhythm rather than him just trying to operate and create. He definitely has been taking more shots in rhythm, at least in that Wisconsin game. But he has gotten himself early in the season to some shooting funks that I think were really self-induced. You know, he has had multiple pump fake threes from the corner, and then he would pump fake, dribble one, step over, and miss. First of all, taking it off the dribble like that is a harder shot, statistically true. It's a less efficient shot. And for Cam, getting into rhythm is extremely important to him as a scorer. You could tell how important rhythm is. I guess rhythm is important to anybody who's going to be a shooter like Cam is. And getting him established early is important. That's why I want him attacking the hoop. You know, there's been a lot of love out there on Twitter about what Cam's game has looked like at the hoop, and rightfully so, because, you know, we saw even flashes of it last year, but seeing him start to attack more often is going to, one, it helps to visualize that ball going in. And when you go to the hoop, you also get to the line. His free throw numbers are up, which is going to help him continue to visualize that ball going in. And he's got to let threes come more naturally through the offensive system. And I would like to see Shaka maybe just run a few more plays. I know that's not really our thing. We aren't really a team that runs a lot of sets, which is fine. But, you know, there might be a couple of more wrinkles I think Shaka can add, and maybe he will, over the next couple months that can help get him open, because I think that's where he is really going to thrive. These possessions where, like, he just walks up and takes moonshots off the dribble under 10 seconds, I mean, they make me infuriated, where I'm screaming at the TV and I'm always looking over to see if he can get a glimpse of Shaka, because I feel like he's going to punch a hole through a wall when he sees it, because you can see how frustrated Shaka gets in the post games. I mean, this talked about this for quite some time now. And so it's going to be interesting over time to see how he evolves and develops as a player, because my God, is the potential there. But one of the things I've actually really, really learned to love about Cam Jones is his off-the-ball defense. He does a phenomenal job of when there's a double in the post. What Shaka does is he usually has sort of like an interceptor, a safety. And that guy, you know, when I watch Cam do it, so you got the double there, and then the safety is sort of in between the ball and one of the open guys. He does a great job of staying on his feet and being in between the ball and one of the potential open guys for the ball to go out to help shut that down, right? Because you've got the two guys squaring off in the block, but then when you have that safety to create turnovers, I mean, one, we've seen a bunch of turnovers. He's just constantly defensively aware. I think his on-the-ball defense has to get better, but his off-the-ball defense is really impressive to me. He's much further along, I think, in the developmental cycle on the defensive side of the ball than Joplin is, than obviously Sean Jones is. I don't think that's necessarily, that's a no-brainer there. But, you know, watching him improve defensively, too, is something that I've really enjoyed. It's going to be interesting seeing his shot selection over the next couple weeks, because what I am looking at, what it says to me, if he can improve that, it tells me so much about Shaka. It tells me so much about Shaka's ability to get guys to buy in, guys to listen, but also his ability to put guys in positions to succeed. That's something that we're going to need if we are going to take over that throne in the Big East. Let's move on to Oso, because, you know, replacing Kerr was something I was worried about when it was going to come to rim protection. I mean, the block party that Kerr put on last year was probably some of the best rim protection I've seen from a Marquette player in quite some time. I thought he was an even better rim protector than Theo John. But anyways, Oso's progression defensively has really impressed me, because he has had some huge tasks when we look at Edie and Smith from Mississippi State. I mean, he took on probably two of the best bigs in the country. And while, you know, if you're going to go back and look at the stat lines, I think Smith had like 16 rebounds and Edie had double digit and then, you know, 20 some odd points. And, you know, the stat line might not tell you that, you know, he did a phenomenal job. But just watch the game, because, you know, those guys are oversized. Those guys are giants. And, you know, Oso has a little bit more weight on him than Kerr did, and I think it's actually harder to move him around than Kerr. One of my issues with Kerr was that I just felt like it was so easy to move him off the block. He was really skinny. I thought it was easy to push him off. Whereas Oso, I think that not only does a better job of at least establishing himself, but I think he actually does a really good job at denying the entry, a much better job than Kerr did. You know, especially in the first half against that game against Purdue, I thought we had an awesome game plan against a team who was bigger than us. And the backside help and the front that Oso put on Edie, and on top of the fact that the guy who was guarding the ball did a great job of keeping his arms in goalposts and denying the pass into the block. You know, he did a really good job of making sure he understood his assignment, played within the defensive scheme, and I think that's what, for me, Oso has stepped in really nicely in replacement of Kerr on the defensive side of the ball. because of his ability to play within the defensive scheme. And Shaka gets a lot of credit for doing a nice job in both of those games in kind of mitigating some of what those bigs could do. Now, Smith, I think they definitely started to out-rebound us in that game. That was probably one of the biggest reasons we ended up losing that game against Mississippi State, was just our inability to win on the glass. You know, rebounding is something that's going to continue. I don't want to say haunts this team. This team actually has done a lot better job of rebounding. I think the guards have done a better job of crashing. Our guards have actually had pretty high rebound numbers for guards in general. And we got a question about that from, again, Scotty. He says it's painful to watch how hard we play on defense, force bad shots, and the other team gets 2 to 4 more possessions, and we have to repeat. If we could just get into the top 150 rebounding, I think we are a top 25 team easy. Why do Shaka teams not fully commit to the boards? I actually think this year we're doing a much better job of committing to the boards. I think we had bad rebounders last year. I think that's what really hurt us. I think our guards have done a better job of committing to the boards. Omax and Oso, I think, are average to above average rebounders. But, you know, we've seen Kolek and Cam and Stevie really do a nice job. And then also getting the ball back up in transition. I know we are one of the higher paced teams, and our ability to guards to come help, I think, is great. You know, I don't think it's about committing to the glass. I think it's about sending some more guys to the glass, and I think Shaka's done a nice job of doing that this year. But to kind of wrap a bow on Oso, I think on the defensive side, I've been really happy with what I've seen. He's obviously not blocking shots at the same extent that Kerr is, but I think he's doing just as good of a job defending the rim. He is a great help defender when a guy is driving off the arc. Offensively, he still is not able to, really own a space in the block. So many times has he shorted shots, taken these little one-handed baby hooks from further out than you'd like. He seems to settle or even shrivel up when he's kind of getting closer to a big at the hoop. I'd like to see him just go through somebody at some point. I mean, he doesn't even get to the line that often. At least go, you know, try to draw a foul. But he's sort of just, he has these moments where he seems to, I don't want to see him be afraid. Afraid's not the right word. I don't think these guys play with fear. That's definitely not the case. But I think he lacks some confidence in his ability to be strong. He doesn't play strong offensively, especially when he's got someone who's either equally as sized as him or as big. And so whether that's him developing a better pump fake to kind of get, you know, a guy in the air and maybe he can get closer to the hoop, or really just trying to play more aggressive in the way that he attacks the basket when he's got the ball, is going to be important down the street. Next, let's talk about Tyler. You know, first of all, the shooting has gotten a lot better. You know, I've read some articles and saw some interviews with him talking about how he really just sort of broke down his shot to the basics, stripped it down, rebuilt it. And when we get him on the show, we're going to talk to him a little bit about that process. I'm really interested. I think that's really cool stuff to geek out on, just seeing a guy's process. Right, trying to make sure, you know, it's hard when you're asking a guy to change the way he does something, and that's muscle memory. I always look at it as, you know, if you write with your left hand and I ask you to write with your right, you know, it becomes so arduous, difficult, it feels uncomfortable. You know, it's the same thing when these guys are asked to change their shot. It is a very uncomfortable thing. Think about it from a golf swing standpoint, right? Any of you golfers out there, when someone asks you to make a tweak or a change, the physical discomfort in that, and especially for guys like this, whose muscle memory is far more advanced than any of the Saturday golfers we've got here listening to the group, you know, that's huge. And so we'll break that down with them. I've been really happy with his shot. I like the arc on his shot a lot better. He's getting, I think, better opportunities to catch and shoot. I think that comes from the fact that Cam and Stevie can take possessions where they can also take the ball up. You know, there's more ball handlers, I think, in this group that Can get the offense in motion. You know, Cam is a really good passer. I should have probably mentioned that before too as well. His willingness, creativity. We didn't really have that last year. Marcel was not a guy who facilitates an offense very well. And Omax is just not a ball handler, period. And so having those other two options, I think, is also creating some more unique opportunities for Tyler to catch the ball, with those two being on the court and being able to help handle and manage some of that. You know, where the issue that, you know, and this is not a new issue, but the finishing at the hoop. You know, last year I brought this up, I think, in the live show with Diener and TK in the house. And, you know, I remember specifically hearing Diener talk about, you know, well, you know, he wasn't a great finisher at the hoop and maybe sort of underplayed a little bit, I think, the importance of the ability to score at the hoop. You know, I get that he's not going to be Kyrie Irving. I don't think that anyone is asking him to be, you know, some spectacular finisher at the hoop. But he's got to keep guys honest. You know, I thought in the Baylor game, you know, they came down to help a lot more than I thought, especially at the hoop. I think maybe there was either some bad scouting there, poor discipline. I wasn't sure exactly why Baylor was doing that quite as much, and it really let TK facilitate a lot of assists in that game. But when you look a little bit more at the Wisconsin game, I think they did a better job of knowing when to stay home and when not to. And that tape is out there. I mean, the tape was out there from last year. It's out there from this year. There are times and there are possessions from Tyler where I think, you know, even when he'll go and attack the hoop early in a possession and in a big possession, he's had a couple of big possessions where he's just forced up some garbage at the hoop. And when he starts to get frustrated, it piles up on itself. I think having some flexibility with ball handlers this year there have been times where I'm like, Shaka's going to pull him, and he has. When you could see that frustration mounting, which is going to be good for him in the long run to take a breather, because it was much harder to get him off the court last year because of we just really did not have any point guard depth. I think we've got more ball handlers this year. Stevie, being a year older, can at least facilitate, get the ball up, get things rolling. I'm not saying he's amazing, but, you know, in comparison, or even put Sean Jones in that category too as well. I think, you know, we have more options to sit him down before he allows that frustration to start to really overtake. He's a super competitive dude. And that's why I think he's great. But when you're young, that also can be your detriment and your own worst enemy from time to time. And so there are some possessions where he does play a little of that hero ball, where I feel like he feels the need to put the game on his shoulders, and in some big possessions try to be the guy that scores. But he's continually having a hard time getting to the hoop. He takes a lot of his shots at the basket from further out than I'd like. And again, you know, to Diener's point, I don't need him to be prolific, but I need him to keep guys honest. You know, and Shaka said it in one of his post games that he said, you know, teams are going to continue to adjust that he's going to have to pick up that part of his game. I don't know if that means he develops a pull up. I don't know if that means he goes to look for some more contact. But that's the part of his game that I have not seen the offseason development in. You know, and if you think about, you know, just, and I'm reading tea leaves here, so, you know, we'll ask TK this when he comes on. It sounds like he's put a lot of his time and effort offensively into trying to get that shot honed in. You know, the reality is, you know, the threes and dunks, right? You know, this year the statistics and the data shows that we are even more extreme in those efficiencies of either at the hoop or at the arc. And when you don't have Marcel and Lewis taking all those mid-range jumpers, you know, those numbers are going to end up looking that way. And I listen, that's good. I want that type of efficiency. And in the end, I value Tyler as a scorer from the arc more than I do at the hoop. But I need him to keep people honest at the hoop. And that really has to get better. And it's something that I was a little disappointed in I didn't see enough progress in that in the offseason. But again, you know, if he was spending a lot of time on the three, then that's maybe where it needed to go. But we'll make sure that's a question we ask him later on. Sean Jones. Wow. My God, is that kid lightning fast. I heard Shaka call him. He's just like a muscle. What a great way to describe him. Just this thriving, giant little muscle. It's the perfect way because of the physicality in which he plays. It's not just speed, but speed and physical. You could tell that kid is fearless. And listen, those first couple games, here's what I've actually loved the most about Sean Jones, and I'm going to break it down into a single play where I feel like I think this single play said so much to me about Sean Jones. In the first couple of games, we all saw his struggle with understanding the speed. I mean, he was playing, reminded me of that Mighty Ducks movie with the kid who skated so fast that all he would do was skate into the boards. And that was him. He just was so quick, but he couldn't stop. Like, that was Sean Jones in the first couple of games of this season where, I mean, he was just fumbling the ball. He was playing frenetic, multiple turnovers, but you were just wowed by the speed. But, you know, getting the minutes that he has in a lot of the big games that he's played. I mean, he's gotten to play some really good minutes against some really good teams, you know, and thank God we've been able to get him those minutes because you're starting to see his ability to understand his speed at this level. And it comes down to one play in particular against Baylor. He's bringing up the ball in transition and moving at what, you know, we'll call 75% speed for him. He gets the ball just around the half court line and he assesses the situation and he's like, fuck it, and puts on the burners to the hoop and blows everybody out of the water in just that half court area. What we saw from him is his ability to understand when to use his speed. That is going to be the most crucial part of his development. And to see him do that so early in the year against Baylor, to me, gets me so excited about who he can be. And I know right now, Dr. Keegan has got a smile ear to ear. That is Dr. Keegan's favorite player by far. He loved him back at the Peach Jam in high school. You know, he's been talking about him forever. In fact, he keeps showing us the screenshots of when Sean Jones was a recruit and him fawning over him at the time. So we got to give Dr. Keegan his love in his early identification of how good Sean Jones was going to be. But really, offensively, I can't wait to see what this kid can become, you know, starting to see the shot round out a little bit. I think he hit one or two in the last game. You know, I struggled a little bit. It's so early for him. And like Ross, you know, Ross is, my God, is he raw? But I mean, he obviously can see the talent and the athleticism there. And both of those guys, the defensive energy they play with, whoo, Ross especially, man. Those guys, I can see exactly why Shaka went out and got both of them, you know, because, you know, the offensive stuff you'll be able to help them with over time. But, you know, to have those guys to play the way they do defensively already this early in their career, whoo, man, you know, we're getting, you know, the one thing we knew we were going to get with Shaka when we bought into him was a great defensive team, and that is absolutely paying off. We are 100% seeing that. We're going to get that year to year from him. You know, the big question mark was really his ability to develop an offense, and his ability to I think, you know, create an offensive system that was going to work. And, you know, I'm excited to see where that's going to go as well. The last thing I want to talk about, you know, just one thing in the Wisconsin game. I want to talk about the last play. I really don't agree with those who are piling on Shaka. I'm obviously a big Shaka fan. Shaka was actually not who my first pick was. It was Porter Moser. That's who I originally wanted. And it really is not a knock on Shaka as much as, you know, and maybe just being a Chicago guy and getting to see a lot of Loyola hoops. I just really had a deep appreciation for the the focus and detail on fundamentals that Porter Moser has put in. But, you know, I'm definitely growing to appreciate so much of that about Shaka. And so while, yes, I'm, as every game goes by, becoming a bigger and bigger Shaka fan, I'm defending him on this for, I think, a couple of reasons. It's really early in the year, and practicing those, you know, few second inbound plays is not something they get. And actually, now that I think about it, he even talked about how they haven't practiced that a lot, and I don't blame them. Like, this, there's only so much time that you could practice with these guys. There's only so much you can get in. There's a lot of new faces. There's a lot of this, even the way that this team operates. And they're starting five, while they may not all be new faces, they're still guys functioning in a new system and functioning under a different understanding of who they're going to be on the court. And so there's a lot of stuff that there's only so many things you can get in during practice time. And being this early in the year, that's not something that you're going to practice a lot. On top of the fact that, you know, a couple of things, it was simply just poor execution on Tyler's part. And those passes, they were terrible passes. You know, there's plain and simple. Like, there's also too, like, what you draw up and then like what your guys execute. All right. So one, we didn't do anything on the execution side. You know, on the flip side, I think when it comes to what we drew up, you know, getting the ball to the half court line was going to be a necessity with how much time is on the clock. That's a, like, really low percentage shot. Like, just to get the ball to that part of the court where everybody knows you need to get it is going to be, you know, something that isn't have a high success rate. And so, you know, not only is the execution bad, you're in a really, really tough spot when you've got to go the full court to get that pass in with that many seconds on the clock. I think if anything, and maybe this isn't on Shaka, because I don't know that he could have instituted this yet at this point, because, you know, I would have, you know, you send the one guy, you know, over by the timeline, right, when that was Cam Jones, you know, obviously that's the guy you want to inbound the ball to at that point in the game. And as he's coming over in the half you know, court line, and he's doubled really in both of those possessions, you know, you have a safety valve that comes down at a lower point on the free throw line. And what I would have maybe done, and I probably, you know, I don't know, I'm not with the team, you know, we don't know what we don't know. Like, we don't know what they see in practice. You know, what these guys see every day in practice dictates a lot of what we see out there. And what we see in a game is not the same, right? There's things that those guys, that those coaches know that these players can't do yet. And so while in our head we might say, oh, hey, it makes, why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that? Because we don't have the depth of information that they do, right? And I think only until, you know, when you take like the way that we used to look at Woj, you know, we had so many years of it that we saw so many of the same mistakes that we had enough information, I think, to make the assessments of where he was really screwing up. I think we're still have some more to learn about Shaka before I think we can make those statements definitively. But I think what I would have liked to have seen, and maybe this is something we'll see later on, is that I would like to see Sean Jones be the safety valve, because at the very least, if you can get that ball to him, even at the free throw line, you're going to have a guy with insane speed who's going to get the ball up the court much faster than, God, most guys in all of college basketball. I mean, he's that kind of rare speed. I would like to see him be the safety valve so that if Cam wasn't open, we could get it to him and still get the ball up the court in a reasonable amount of time. Let's wait to judge Shaka on those when we get to February and January. You're right. I mean, I know there's some things last year. We can go back to the Creighton game specifically, and that were some inbound plays at the end that maybe we didn't love. I'm still all right with Shaka on this stuff so far. I think, you know, some criticism is okay, but I, you know, let's let time tell, especially as some of these guys. So let's move on to some other Twitter questions that we couldn't get to today. The first one is from @Marquette61, Harry Balzik. Yep, Balzik? It feels like a Simpsons episode. Seymour Butts? Sorry, Harry. Where does Marquette rank in terms of average age and experience of the teams in the P6 conferences? The roster outside of Oso has been turned over in 24 months with Reitzel out on injury. Marquette's nine rotation players are all 21 years old and younger. Actually, so we are the 63rd youngest team in the country. We have an average age of 1.24 years of experience. The D1 average is 1.9, so we're one standard deviation below that. But also, too, some things to think about. We have zero seniors set to graduate unless Omax decides to go pro, and that should bring us up to the D1 level next year. And hopefully, you know, Omax doesn't. We continue to have this sort of important continuity that I think Shaka is striving for, which also kudos to you, Shaka, to strive for that in the year of the these years of transfer portal hell. I think it's a I like the approach, but will be difficult. And I think also too, just to kind of think about that age as well, is, you know, you've got guys that are playing important minutes in Ross and Jones, right? And Ben Gold. You know, those guys have been playing some pretty legit minutes for freshmen early in the year. Now, what does that look like when we get to Big East play? I don't know. We'll see. I think this team is better when they can rotate guys in and out, like hockey lines, to keep up the intensity in which they require to play if they're going to be successful. I mean, to play the defense that they do, to play the tempo that they do, it's going to require them to have, you know, they can't play with a six-man, seven-man rotation and think that you're going to get away with that. Guys are just going to get gassed. So I think, you know, we're not only young, but we're also needing a lot from our young guys, which it's going to be interesting, again, to see their development over time. The next question from Zach Jaron at Zach Flaw Trade. Zach of all trades. Oh, my bad. My bad, Zach. Nice. Well done there, sir. What's the best lineup when a bucket is needed in the waning minutes of a game? You would think Jop is in, but who does he replace of the starting five? You know, I don't know that there's a best matchup. I don't know that there's a best lineup. I think it's going to be about matchup. I think if you ask Shaka that, he would know the answer to that because I think he's still learning and trying to figure that out. And I think this team is going to probably be best served in the final minutes of the games, going with offensive and defensive substitutions down the last 3 minutes. Because of the incomplete games in some of these players that we discussed earlier, he's going to have to try to just get guys in when he can through timeouts, penalties, dead balls, to get the matchups that he wants. Now, can that change? Absolutely, especially if we see Joplin start to take that step defensively. I think you're going to see him come in for a Stevie and maybe play like a three, right? He's a little slow maybe to be a defensive three. So again, that's going to be matchup based. Right. And, you know, depending on the game Omax is having, right, you can maybe switch them up. But again, see, everything I'm saying, even as I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking in my head is like, okay, well, how big's their four? How big's their three? Do they play small? Have they decided to play a small lineup in the second half of this game? The good thing about our team is that we do have options to play against a variety of different teams and when it comes to their physical size. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, and we're going to keep an eye on as the year goes on. It felt really good to do this podcast. I'm happy to be back. As we said, we're not going to be able to have as many as we had last year, but we're still going to do our very best to bring content to the greatest fans in college basketball. We greatly appreciate your participation in the show. We'll continue to try to take questions for you all, but also as we get guests, we're going to try to set up segments for you all to ask some questions of the people that we bring in. So thank you so much for your time. Have a fantastic day.